What is going on, everyone? Oh, nice. My my cat literally just jumped off my my lap there and knocked my whole monitor system. Great start to the show. I'm here with Jason Barker today. And today we're going to be talking about surveillance, the lead in to CBDC. Now, last year, I actually, you know, I'll be truthful. I for sure thought we would see the rollout to CBDC in 2023. I heard David Knight talk about it a lot. And I thought for sure we'd have a catalyst moment for that. Now that we're in 2024, I'm, you know, feeling that even more so. I feel like 2025 is kind of the golden year for that, with crypto and the escalation of all of this going on. But before we kind of get into that, I just want to introduce my co-host, Jason Barker. He has his own podcast, The Foxhole and Knights of the Storm, which is on Rumble and also freeworld.fm now. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
All right. Yeah. And what time is that at, the Free World slot?
So the Free World, the Foxhole is going to be kind of different. It's 9 o'clock central on Tuesdays is when it's going to be. But then I'm going to rebroadcast it at the normal time, which is Thursdays at, what is it, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Rumble. So it's going to be kind of a rebroadcast, but I'll do it as a streaming so that I can do the chat. But if you wanted to like be a part of the show, you got to kind of catch it on Free World. So I'm kind of giving that exclusivity to sure. Free World. And then Knights of the Storm is 10:30 Eastern on sure. Rumble and Free World simultaneously. So
absolutely. Very cool. Just want to introduce my kitten here, Madison, who's being very obnoxious. If you see a tail floating around on the screen here, that's what's happening. Yeah. So, and I will say for today as well, since this is a pre-record, if you leave comments, I'm more than likely the reason we're doing a pre-record on Wednesday, because this you'll see this on Friday at 1 p.m. Central, as we usually do. But I'm doing a pre-record because I'm actually going to be filming another video literally at this time on Friday for my YouTube channel, Surge the Purge. So make sure to also follow me there if you don't already. That's more of, I guess, lesser, like, offensive to YouTube kind of content, you know.
what are you going to be doing? What's the project?
I'm actually filming an off-grid homestead south of here. It's a woman that I think she lives like by herself out in the middle of the desert. And there's like a small community out there of you know, preppers, the prep community, essentially prepping for, you know, CBDC. Yeah. So it's kind of fitting, you know, for today's a topic for sure. Yeah. And then before we really jump into the show, I just want to mention this for both Jason and I real quick. Let me share my screen here. Is, you know, if you want to help support the broadcast for both of us, you can go to Wise Wolf Gold, or specifically Wolfpack Gold if you want the subscription. This is from our friend Tony Arterburn in Branson, Missouri, which I think that's pretty close to you, isn't it? Branson.
Yeah, it's about an hour, almost 2 hours away. I've been there a few times.
Sure, yeah. So if you'd like to support this broadcast, you can use, you know, this link. I don't think you have to use the specific link, but if you go here and use code SURGETHEPURGE, all one word, or use code FOXHOLE, you know, whichever one of us you like better, you can support. So with that being said, let's jump right into this. So surveillance, as we all know, I mean, to anyone watching this broadcast, you already know, you know, you're being surveilled, technically through, whatever screen you're watching this program through, whether it be your phone, computer, doesn't matter. That's kind of the way it goes, you know, and, whether people believe that or not at this point, is kind of, an inevitable fact. You know, as we know, the NSA documents, from not, I mean, now it's actually a while ago, that those were released, that essentially all your cameras are spying on you, whether you like it or not. If you use Google, YouTube, Amazon, you know, you just talking into your device will, you know, get products that are similar to what your liking is already ready to go before you even log into the app. And I think even the lay person has seen proof of this now coming into 2024. Whether people want to accept this fact or not is kind of the other factor into this. But that kind of leads me into a couple things I want to document. But what are your thoughts on this, Jason, before I kind of jump into the video here?
It's definitely going on. It's sold as a convenience tool. You know, when you hit the I agree, you know, whenever you sign up for a Facebook or a Twitter or whatever, and you're supposed to read the terms of service, and then you hit the I agree in there, it's going to tell you that they're going to, you know, look at what you're looking at, and that's to curtail advertising to you. But they're using it for more than that. Yes, it is. You know, it's probably going to give me a list of videos on YouTube that I might be interested in. And you could see that if you go, you know, I like to watch people forging knives. It fascinates me, you know, forging. I watched two or three videos on that. And then the next, everything queued up after that to autoplay is going to be all forging knives. Not even anecdotal. We've tested this, but a good story. There was a, and it's gone beyond just watching you. It's also looking at who's around you. So we had a lady come over that is friends of ours when we were in Georgia, and she was getting ready to go to a wedding. And so she was looking on her phone. She was looking at wedding dresses. So she comes over to the house. She latches onto my Wi-Fi, you know, to save her data. And then I get on my phone or my tablet or whatever it was, and I pull up my Facebook, and there is an ad for a wedding dress.
Sure.
I've never looked up a wedding dress in my life, but it knew that we were next to each other. So it must have assumed that I was going to go to the wedding or we're talking about it. So they really are compiling all this data in real time on us. And yeah, you could say it's benign. It's for, you know, for proper advertising, to they can advertise the stuff you might want, but they are using it for more than that, I guarantee you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I guess you could call it like cities that gather more like-minded individuals, like what I'm about to show here in New York City. LA would be a similar occurrence, Chicago. You know, these are people that essentially enjoy giving their rights up for convenience, and they don't even see it that way a lot of the time, is what I've noticed. But New York City, this is, you know, New York City's got a lot of tyrannical laws that are unconstitutional straight up, and they pass them off like ordinances, which, you know, again, ordinances in order to be legal have to be constitutional, but that's been convoluted through our legal system. So, you know, states or counties/cities will pass ordinances and basically say, oh, well, it's temporary, so it doesn't matter if it's unconstitutional. In this case, New York City just, literally this title is actually exactly what it is. New York City just banned drivers from honking. Now, this guy, Cash Jordan, on YouTube here, he actually lives in New York City. And he pretty much, that's all he does is journal, you know, what's happening in New York City. But essentially, like the main midtown area of New York, in Manhattan, mostly all this is in Manhattan. They just started setting up not only, I don't know if you know about this, Jason, but they have new ticketing now to basically combat congestion in the city. So you have to pay about $23. Yeah. Yes, so you know about that, to enter into parts of New York City now. It costs $23, which is a lot of money. I think that's like more than most toll roads in the United States. But this is their tolling system. And on top of this, now they've added audio cameras, I guess you could call it. I mean, I don't know if that's what that is necessarily classified as, but it's an audio camera that can pick up sound. So if you honk what they're deeming excessively, it'll actually just send you a ticket in the mail. And obviously, as we know right now, New York City is very low on cash. I'm sure this is a part of that aspect of it. But yeah, basically, we have some tyrannical surveillance. So I'll just play this video for you here.
He doesn't need fear and panic just gripping people as they go about their daily business. And you could probably argue that people being afraid of New York hurts the local economy and local restaurants like this one. On top of that, certain parts of the city are also gun-free zones. Like Times Square down the street from here, that's actually a gun-free zone. And if a car with a super loud tailpipe is that big of an issue, we shouldn't have this at all in New York City. Even if they're fun to drive and reasonably cool to look at. And believe it or not, a few years ago in Times Square, an incident took place with loud vehicles that made people think the city was under attack.
Screaming, scattering, widespread panic in Times Square after mistaking the sounds of a motorcycle backfiring for the worst.
And we just got pop, 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 pop. It sounded like gunshots. It definitely did. 2,000 or 3,000 people maybe just like dissipated into like thin air.
So I guess if you live in a part of the country where you're surrounded by loud backfiring cars, this isn't going to be a big deal to you. But here, it's very rare and people are already really nervous right now. Tensions are very high as far as safety goes. And all those people running and stampeding each other, someone could have gotten really, really hurt.
And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if loud cars and street-related antics caused similar incidents.
But even if we don't have another mass stampede caused by a motorcycle that's a little bit too loud, the acceptable levels of noise that you can hear for a long period of time, those levels are lower than constant exposure to something that's 85 decibels. That's dangerous. And loud street noise could detrimentally affect people in an apartment or office.
Yeah, so pretty much, you know, the major complaint you could see is just noise, people being afraid of noise or being annoyed by a noise, which in turn is, you know, causing people to literally vote themselves into tyranny.
You know, real quick, if you look at the 15-minute city agenda, and yes, they have a 15minutecity.com now, so it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a real deal. They're moving quick on that. But that's one of the arguments for the 15-minute city and to take away your car is noise pollution. That's one of the arguments they make for it. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, and I forgot to mention that, actually, yeah, it's not just honking in New York City now. It's also if you have like a loud muffler on your vehicle, you can get a ticket for that in certain parts of town. And the caveat to this is they are not telling people where the cameras are. So what he was saying in the beginning of the video, like, oh, we want to, you know, basically we want you to be scared of, you know, loud noises coming into New York. So that way you don't make any because you don't know where you're going to get a ticket at. Right. So it's supposed to deter, you know, collectively people making loud noises with their vehicles because you don't want to get a ticket. I mean, what do you think?
Could we not make that same argument for concealed carry? If you don't know who has a gun, it's going to deter crime, right? So,
well, I mean, that's a great point.
Yeah, I mean,
in this case, they just use it for the opposite effect.
Yeah, they're using it for the opposite. You don't know where the enforcement mechanisms are, so it causes you to be compliant at all times. And that is some dystopian stuff right there. And yeah, do they keep the geese from honking? That's what I want to know.
Well, and then here's the other question, right? Like, so what if there's actually an emergency you need to honk for? So now you're going to get a ticket for that potentially, you know?
Well, those laws have been around. I mean, I've been in places where if your muffler exceeds a certain decibel, they can pull you over and then check it and ticket you. I've been and there's places where it is actually illegal to honk unless it's an emergency. So, I mean, the laws have been around. You can argue whether they're constitutional or not. I would say they're not.
Well, just think about how much surveillance is going on in Manhattan right now. You know,
well, that's like the difference is now they have a way to catch you. Before they'd have to catch you in the act, you know, and I don't think a cop ain't going to hear you drive by and say, oh, his muffler's too loud. Let's go find this guy. But if you're drag racing up and down Main Street, you know, they might pull you over and then that's something. But now it's going to be comply all the time. There's no exceptions to anything. You know,
yeah, it's all automated now. And I think, you know, I want to say, I can't remember what the number is. I want to say it's like 9 or 11. It's a low number of states in the USA that do not have toll roads. It's a very low number. Most states in the country have tolls. And tolling, I mean, is just a form of surveillance, essentially. It's all, you know, sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I got you on that one. So I was coming cross country. It's from California to Illinois, as a matter of fact, on my motorcycle. And there was the toll road I had hit. And, you know, I was flying through there. And then I stopped at somewhere along the way. They had like this big complex of, you know, gas stations and McDonald's and all that stuff. It was like part of the toll road system. It was on the toll road. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to this trucker. And the trucker said he had to hang out for about 45 minutes. And I'm like, why? He's like, when you get that ticket and then you go pay it, you know, your little ticket that you get on, you get on the road. And then when you pay it, they'll do a time differential and determine if you were speeding. So I was like, oh crap, I might want to hang out here for an hour then, because I've been hauling butt on my motorcycle. So yeah, you're right. It is a surveillance method. You check in at a certain time, you've gone X amount of miles, you know, kind of like high school, you got a train traveling at whatever distance, whatever speed. And then they say, okay, the speed limit's 65 and you must have been doing at least 70 to have made it to the end. And so, right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And it's always subjective, right? And how fast you're allowed to go, right? They have a speed limit and generally 5 miles over is okay. Sometimes 10 over is okay, depending on where you're at, who's enforcing. 15 is almost never okay, but it's like, who's determining that law, you know? Personally, I think speed limits are unconstitutional. Someone can, you know, write me in the comments, I guess, if they, you know, disagree, but it's always giving your safety for your rights. I mean, that's what it is.
A toll road is like it needs to be a private road if it's a toll road, number one. Okay. And if it's a private road, I should be able to set the rules because you're using my service. But at the same time, what enforcement method do I have to charge you?
Well, what about on a free road though, right? Like not a toll road, but you got speed limits everywhere, right? Other than
it should be up to the people who live there. I mean, I don't want people ripping through my, you know, when I lived in a regular neighborhood, I didn't want people ripping through there at 50 miles an hour. You know, grandkids are playing outside.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that was a point of contention in my last neighborhood in Georgia. We had a Facebook group for our neighborhood and people were arguing for speed bumps. I don't want speed bumps. The things are annoying. Right. But people were ripping through the neighborhood. We had in 1 year, 4 mailboxes taken out. Mine was one of them. Drunk driver. Yeah. Drunk driver comes speeding through in the middle of the night and took out my mailbox. And my neighbor got it like a week later. But that's a community, you know. If the community comes together and says, hey, we want our speed limit to be 15 miles an hour because our children are playing outside, I think that's okay. But I don't think the state should come in and determine that for us.
Right. Know? So in terms of the taxpayer, kind of going back to that whole thing.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep. I was going to pull up this, the good old Sidewalk Labs.
Yeah.
Have you seen this before?
I have not seen it, but David talks about it all the time.
Yeah, so this is, it's kind of interesting because back in the day, I want to say back in like 2018, he was talking about this because this is when it actually was occurring. And to those who don't know, this is a study carried out funded by Google in Toronto, Canada, as primarily where this was. They kind of have taken down a lot of the website now because of its underfunding. What ended up happening essentially is they had made what you're talking about, a 15-minute city inside of already developed city, which was Toronto, and basically had like, you know, millennial aged people live there for a stint of time and basically be under surveillance 24/7 to just see how, you know, the human psyche would react to this. And ironically enough, they didn't like it.
Yeah.
I think the consensus generally for everybody was, you know, they felt creeped out by all the cameras around them. But it's just interesting that, Google, you know, being the exactly what we were just talking about with all the websites essentially that use Google to promote ads to you is funding 15 minute cities.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the Google, I was reading an article maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, but they kind of inadvertently let you know that they had compiled all this data on you. What they were talking about doing was if you've been to a Walmart or Kmart or whatever, you see they're starting to put these digital signs up that have the ads on them, you know?
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah. Like a big TV screen kind of thing. Well, yeah. In this article, they were talking about how it would use facial recognition to target advertise you as you walk by. It wasn't a very popular idea because now if you're walking through the store with your wife, she's going to see what your search history looks like. You know what I'm saying? Because it's going to throw up an ad of, I don't know.
Right. People still want private.
Privacy.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But they've been compiling all this data on us. Everything gets skimmed. You know, your phone conversations, your text messages, everything is saved. And they have these massive data warehouses. And they're typically out in the middle of the desert, which doesn't make sense because you have to keep those things cool. So, you know, their green energy nonsense, you know, they're not serious about that. Just like New York, you look at Times Square, all the TV screens all over the buildings. They're not serious about energy. You know, they want to take your energy away.
Yeah, it's the ultimate propaganda for sure.
Yeah. But no, yeah, everything has been skimmed for years now. The AI is the missing piece, the AI. And remind me to tell you the story that happened on Angry Tiger's chat about a week and a half ago. And I'll tell you how they're going to weaponize that against us.
Oh, so, well, is it, if you could segue it in, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, sure. So probably almost a year ago, we were having a conversation, and Harps, he's our friend from Australia. He seems to think it was when we were kind of like BSing on StreamYard, like not even broadcasting anything. I thought it was my chat on David Knight's show in Rockfin, but we were talking about guns. Somebody wanted to know what was a good, reliable handgun. And I said, you know, for cheap. And I said, well, the Taurus 9mm is pretty decent. I've heard it's pretty reliable. But if you got a little more money, the Smith & Wesson M&P9 is a pretty nice gun, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody saved those comments somewhere in a data storage facility somewhere. And I'm watching Angry Tiger on YouTube, totally different platform. And I made a comment. I was on my phone for a second, and I made a comment that talked about Pfizer killing. So he was talking about bombastic reporting. And I said, yeah, you know, you can say the earth is flat or hollow or lizard people, and you're going to get a bazillion people follow you. But you tell the truth about Pfizer killing children with their medicine. And maybe we don't want to put that on YouTube. But
this isn't even on YouTube anymore.
Yeah. Well, in real time, it grayed out my comment and nobody saw it. And then I came back in to the computer. And I'm sitting here with my grandson. He likes to watch Franco. That's Angry Tiger. He likes to watch him. And all of a sudden, those two comments about the 9mm handguns came up and posted themselves. Really? And it was in a context where he was talking about something and almost looked like I was making a call to violence. And it was not the full sentence, not the full in context. It just said 9mm Taurus, 9mm Smith & Wesson. M&P.
This was from you talking it, like you didn't type it, right? You talked it into the mic.
No, this was from months and months prior in a whole different conversation on a whole different platform.
Right. Well, so were you talking it or typing it?
So I seem to remember typing it. Harps remembers having the conversation, and maybe it was both. Maybe we talked about it. You know, we were hanging out in StreamYard, kind of backstage, not recording anything, and. Sure. But I remember I've typed that stuff out before. You know, I give gun advice to people if they ask for it. But that was stored somewhere in a data place. The AI didn't like the comment I made. It grayed me out. And then when the time was right, it inserted those two comments out of context to make it look like I was doing a call to violence.
Interesting.
And then incidentally, the next time Tiger did a show, he got banned on YouTube, or he got, you know, a strike or whatever. Yep, within a few minutes. So
wow.
this is how data collection will be weaponized. They sell it as convenience. Everything is always sold as convenience, but it's a bait and switch. they're going to use it against you. It's like the police say, anything you say can and will be used against you. They don't use anything for you, for your benefit.
Yeah, well, that's actually a great, yeah, great point. And I mean, that's kind of the same with this New York, you know, sound camera stuff. I've read that most of the residents in Manhattan are for it. And it would make a lot of sense too, because they don't have cars, a lot of them. I'm sure a lot of the traffic you're getting is from outside of the city going in to work or food, you know, goods, stuff like that. And most of the residents in Manhattan are literally for, you know, ticketing people, surveilling. And you're right, they store all of that into a database later. And it never goes away. I mean, anything you post on the internet at all, doesn't matter the platform, doesn't go away, at least for the most part. If you're using like a Google search and search engine, more than likely, it's there forever, even if you delete it, right? And we know that for sure, too, because we even have the Wayback Machine now. You know, nothing actually goes away.
Well, that's part of what David Knight talks about, where the chip manufacturers, you know, your microchip manufacturers and then your software manufacturers are teaming up together, and I forget what that's called, the program, but they know that when you put something on the internet, it can never go away, even if they want it to go away. So with like memes and stuff, like AI has a hard time like distinguishing what a meme says. They're trying to get better at it because they want certain memes, certain pictures and things to be off the internet if it's counter to their narrative. So what they're trying to do now is they're trying to stop it at the source, because they know once it touches the internet, it's there forever. So now, you know, if Jason Barker wants to do a Photoshop meme, it's going to stop me before I can upload it, because it's going to know that it's Jason Barker's software. It's Jason Barker's IP address. It's Jason Barker's chip in his computer. So,
It's literally the social credit score formula.
Yes.
Through AI. So like, if you want to avoid this, essentially you cannot be on the internet.
Yeah, well, I have copies of, you know, I built my own computer. I know that there's no tag in this chip. I'll just have to use it as long as I can. But I have old copies of software that I purchased, you know, years ago. So I can still use the old stuff. Now going back to the audio cameras or whatever, the microphones in New York, if that's what the people that live there want, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it. I would just warn them that it's not going to be used to help them, you know.
Well, but that's kind of how I see it too. I mean, yeah, like it's like, okay, you want this thing, but you already know that that's going to be recording everything, not just vehicles, right? So, you know, someone could be having a private conversation and happen to walk past one of those cameras, and if there's something that could be construed as malicious intent, can be used against them unknowingly. I mean, I would be afraid to have a conversation in New York right now, you know, just with my friend. Like if I was talking about this kind of stuff, or like talking about guns, right? Knowing that New York is a very unfriendly Second Amendment city, New York City, that is. Well, actually, the whole state is too. I would be like afraid, frankly, to have a private conversation. And I think that's kind of the direction that they inevitably are taking all of this anyways. It's like, okay, so now your private vehicle is under the gun. You really don't know, and no pun intended there. you really don't know, you know, where these cameras are, as they said, right? And I'm sure what'll happen is people take pictures of them eventually, you know, get exposed. They'll probably end up moving around the cameras. But the bottom line is it's creepy. It's Orwellian, and it is documenting everything. Go ahead.
They've had cameras, or like cameras, I'll say microphones. There's certain cities that already have them, and they had them for quite a while. And that's for that triangulating.
That document audio.
Yeah, well, for like gunshots, you know, if there's a gunshot, they can triangulate where that shot came from. You know, there's certain cities that have that. I don't know which ones have it, but I know the technology is out there. And that it is out there. So
here, let me take a guess. No. Chicago. Seriously, that's probably one of them. Well, it seems like, you know, the breeding grounds for all this stuff always starts in the same places. I mean, New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles. That's usually, you know, the three major cities in America is where most of this stuff starts.
Yeah, the bigger the government, the more problems you get. So you have to have more solutions. You know,
that's yeah, and the, and these people vote themselves into this stuff, mm-hmm. Which, you know, this kind of, I guess, segues us into our other topic here, which is CBDC, right? So, you know, through, I guess you could say, promotion of everything being so hype, you know, in terms of like cryptocurrency, you know, surveillance, like what we're talking about with residents essentially voting themselves into surveillance. And I definitely understand where you're coming from, saying like it could be a good thing if residents want that, so be it, right? It could be definitely debated whether it's constitutional in the first place. But other than that, I think it just shows the mentality of the people in these cities that quite literally want to be surveilled. They don't care. And another, you know, another aspect, and I think we've talked about this before, with just the First Amendment, right? Like when I go out and film, occasionally I'll get, you know, a person that says, hey, I don't consent, you know, to being on camera. And to that, I literally tell them, you don't have a choice. If I consent to this video, it's happening. If we're on so the public sidewalk.
I looked that up because my daughter got a red light. She ran a red light and I had to pay a $50 ticket. And I was trying to look up if it was constitutional to film her without her consent. And the general rule of thumb is reasonable expectation of privacy. So that's what it is. That's right. So I can't film through your window into your living room because that's your home. Okay. Now you could argue whether or not it's, you know, if I'm in my car, yes, I'm on a public street, but I'm in my car. That's my private place. Are they allowed to get a picture of my face to prove it was me driving? That could maybe be argued. But if you're out walking on the street, yeah, it's most states are a single consent rule, not a dual consent rule.
So, yeah. Well, technically, yeah, like yeah, that's even kind of a different conversation too, because it's like, okay, recording, like California is a two-party consent state. What a surprise. But most states are one-party consent, but usually filming on the public sidewalk doesn't matter. That falls under the First Amendment, regardless, meaning that you have no expectation, exactly what you're saying, of privacy, right? So like, even though you can't walk up to somebody's home and do that, you can walk up to businesses and straight up put a camera in the window if they have the blinds open. Totally legal. Yeah. You can do it because it's like, hey, if you don't want people, basically what the law is if you can video anything that you can see with your own eyes on a public sidewalk. So if someone leaves their blinds open, leaves the door open to their business without you stepping foot into the business, you can still film in their business. That falls under the First Amendment. So you see a lot of people that say, hey, I don't consent to my business being on video. Well, close the door then. You know, that's pretty much what it comes down to, or close the blinds. So it becomes, yeah, it's kind of construed, because it's like, well, it's the First Amendment, but they take that and now use it against you in the same way by, you know, having red light cameras, which I'm totally against. And that could be considered unconstitutional in the sense that no actual law enforcement saw that with their own eyes. It's a camera picking it up. How accurate is this? You know,
and I think I could have beat that in court if I went there, but it would have cost me more money to drive back, because I think it happened in Tennessee. I believe I would have had to drive all the way to Tennessee to go to court to fight it. Over $50, and it's going to cost me more than that in gas. You know, so
totally. I think you know, again, it's all convenience. That, you know, construes all this Orwellian type of surveillance going on. And obviously,
one more thing, talking about you know, the convenience aspect, let's take a look at Facebook. All right, so I had pictures of me that friends put up, you know, in a group or whatever, and they would tag me. You know, this is Jason Barker. The algorithm learned who I was through facial recognition from those pictures. So I went to upload a picture of me and some friends at work or whatever, and it automatically did the tag suggestions, and it knew who everybody was.
Yeah, I've noticed that. So, that is pretty bizarre.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's, you know, so I asked people to stop tagging me. you know, I think I'm going to start putting up pictures of Homer Simpson and tagging as me, or, you know, to throw off the algorithm.
Yeah. Well, that, and that's, yeah, that kind of leads me into the next point with the algorithm stuff, which is, yeah, the CBDC aspect of all this. Like I was talking about at the beginning of the broadcast, I really did think that 2023 would be, you know, the beginnings of CBDC, which I guess, you know, you could actually say 2020 was the beginnings of the idea of CBDC through universal basic income through the stimulus checks. Yeah, I mean, that could be, that's kind of the beginnings of the whole thing. But I wanted to talk a bit about, you know, cryptocurrency, because this is kind of I wouldn't say it's offensive to some, but I mean, there's a lot of people that are very bullish on on Bitcoin, Ethereum. That, I mean, you have like the Max Kaisers of the world that quite literally worship Bitcoin as an idol. So while I think, you know, investing is, there's nothing wrong with investing, not financial advice, but, you know, nothing wrong with investing. I kind of want to talk about the trustworthiness of Bitcoin and some of these other cryptocurrencies, because I think a lot of people, you know, there's this story that goes with Bitcoin, that essentially this guy, now I can't think of the name.
Yeah, Yamamoto or something like that. Is that
his name? that's what it is. Yeah, that he essentially came up with this blockchain technology and then disappeared off the face of the planet, and you know, no one, or Satoshi. Yeah, Satoshi. That's where they come up with that. The terminology. Yeah,
Nakamoto.
Satoshi Nakamoto. Yeah, that's his name. And essentially, he disappeared right off the... I mean, it's really a story that's too good to be true. I mean, it's a straight-up fantasy. This story that's been very sensationalized, which I've really never bought into from the beginning. I'm like, that really doesn't sound right. Like, this guy would be just such a good guy that he wants to invent this great technology to free everyone from the dollar or whatever... currency we're on at the moment, right? And I really, you know, this is something I want to touch on, which again might, I guess, some may take offense to this comment. I really don't trust anything that Alex Jones says, but he did say something that that I found interesting. So I this was a couple years ago. I was listening to a podcast that he did with Andrew Schultz, the comedian. And in the podcast, you know, he frankly got pretty drunk with this guy, and they started talking about Bitcoin for a while, and they're going really in depth. And at the end of it, Alex says, "Hey, man, at the end of the day, it's totally controlled. The whole story's fake." And for me, I was like, you know, sometimes you got to get a guy drunk to admit the truth. You know what I mean? Because I, you know, I don't obviously have like any proof that comment that he said is true, right? But there's sometimes you can just listen to the tone in somebody's voice and just tell that they might be telling the truth. And when he made that comment, it really sat with me for a while, because I had, at the time, this was at the height of Bitcoin, you know, reaching like $60,000 in price value, and everything was just ridiculously chaotic. I actually had investments in crypto. I didn't have any in Bitcoin. I was kind of against it at the time, but you know, the hype surrounding Bitcoin was off the chain. And he made that comment, and this is, you know, as that story was, you know, going around, that this guy invented this thing and then doesn't exist anymore, kind of thing. And I really think that Bitcoin is what is going to be used as the CBDC. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I don't really know a whole lot about crypto. I talked to Tony Arterburn about this, because he actually has a Bitcoin ATM in his Branson office, and I asked him. My concern with crypto in general is it's just a bunch of numbers they make up. It's only as good as the confidence people have in it, and it's kind of like our dollar. Our dollar is only as good as the confidence people have in it. But Bitcoin was unique. It was unique in the fact that it's finite, right? There's only going to be so many Bitcoins at the end of the day. And my question for Tony was, okay, right now transactions, because I think Bitcoin is the best one out there as far as most secure. I some people say it's not exactly secure, but
It's not that it's Bitcoin itself. It's the exchanges that you have to use.
Well,
because you know, the exchange, the IRS.
And I want to get to that. Remind me to talk about FTX, but Bitcoin.
yeah, that's a good
Bitcoin,
one.
Bitcoin. I asked him. I said, so when you, if I was to do a transaction with you, okay, via, you know, using Bitcoin, number one, nobody knows that that transaction happened. Okay, so that's what they don't like. But number two, that transaction is done using the same computers or GPUs that are mining for the Bitcoin. So basically they're like, hey, you want to get some Bitcoin, plug this in and let it crunch these numbers and try to solve the calculation, whatever it is that gets you that Bitcoin, right? But then it's also doing the transaction. So my question for Tony was, what happens when the last Bitcoin is mined? What's going to be the incentive to have these? So he actually had a good answer for me. He said that's going to be like in 100 years by the time that happens, for one. And then number two, what it'll most likely go to is a pay for transaction. So if I was to do a transaction with you, there would be like a 2% fee that would incentivize those people to keep those computers on. So that was the only person that's been able to answer that for me. And then the last point, looking at FTX, so there's got to be something there. And I think it's the anonymity. So that leads me to believe it is somewhat secure because the government had to allow FTX to crash and burn. And take it. So FTX was not a crypto. FTX was an exchange and it was mismanaged, but it was used to demonize crypto right as they're trying to roll out the Fed Now thing. So they're trying to usher in the CBDC, but crypto is a direct competitor to CBDC. Now, if they marry the two, like you're suggesting, that could happen, you know? So,
I mean, this is the one thing I noticed with the, especially Bitcoin, the people that promote it. Something's not right about it. I mean, let alone the technology, right? Like, okay, we're talking about transactions. Technically on paper, you know, they're supposed to be untraceable, but who's to say that that's even true? I mean, yeah, it's on, like we were just talking about the internet. Now I know blockchain can function without internet. Technically it can, it's its own thing, but still when you're using these exchanges, you're functioning these transactions through the internet. That's what happens when you log onto the exchange. So somebody is documenting all your exchanges, and I do not know of an actual way other than there is one way, I should say this, because you can send Bitcoin to, you know, just people's personal wallets, right? Like you can, that's how the technology works, where you transact it. Like if you have a cold storage wallet, you can take all of it offline. The blockchain still works without the internet. So like your currency will fluctuate up and down regardless of what crypto it is. And you can send that to people's wallets. Technically, this is untraceable, but it goes back to the whole fact of, well, something's got to track the transaction because somebody created the technology, and anything with the creation point to it has to be traceable when it involves technology like this, in my opinion.
I'm sure it is. It's just who can trace it, and that's the problem with anonymous transactions that the government has. Number one, they can't tell what you're doing. And that's why they're trying to say Bitcoin is used to launder drug dealer money. You know, that's how they're trying to demonize it. But if we do any kind of transaction now with the fiat currency system, it's getting taxed every step of the way. Every single transaction, there's somebody making some money somewhere. And then they can tax it further just by printing some more and inflating the currency. So that's a tax on your savings. You know, if you got $20 in your wallet and they print some more money and tomorrow you go to try to buy $20 worth of stuff, guess what? You're only getting $19 worth of stuff. So they stole that dollar, the value of that dollar from you. They can't do that with something they don't control. That's the problem.
Yeah. And that's actually a perfect way to state it. And that's what I was going to say too, with the exchanges like FTX. I mean, that is all very much traceable by the IRS. Obviously, Sam Bankman fraud committed a lot of fraud.
He's still not in jail. Oh,
really? Yeah. I thought he might have gotten a conviction now.
Last I checked, he was still not in jail. So,
well, either way, that's the one thing I wanted to mention too, because Max Kaiser is kind of the biggest kryptonaire. we could use that word. In fact, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this video. Have you seen this video? There's a video of him at the Bitcoin conference a couple years ago. They have these annual things. And he actually just straight up rips like an $100 bill in front of the interviewer. He's like, and he basically tells him, hey, I have enough Bitcoin to buy a senator. Have you ever seen that video?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. So he's getting interviewed because, you know, again, he's like the crypto guy, you know, the Bitcoin guy. Mm-hmm. And he literally pulls out like an $100 bill and he's like, you know, yeah, look at this. Rips it up. And the guy says, don't you know that that's a felony? And he's like, does it look like I care? I have enough Bitcoin to buy a senator. and you know, for me personally, Max Kaiser is, I don't know what your thoughts are on Max Kaiser. I don't really fully trust him. He's worked with a lot of big bankers in a past life. I think George Soros is potentially one of them, actually. So I just find that the people that promote the product, I don't find them to be trustworthy. I find it to be a lot of whales pumping and dumping, and a lot of people with ties to government that are promoting the product. That's what I'm calling it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Tony, I had Tony Arterburn on last night on Free World on the Foxhole. But anyway, he had talked about that, this pump and dump idea where, you know, sometimes things go down on purpose. So like, let's just say, for instance, I was into property in real estate. If I could literally cause some instability in my local market to cause housing prices to radically drop, and I had the money to come scoop those properties up, then I could just artificially make it go up again and then sell those properties. So, you know, people that are heavily involved, even in Bitcoin, I would say any of these cryptos, I think that they do manipulate it. For that same reason, for the pump and dump aspect of it. And that's how they get rich, you know. And still, that one last thing on Bitcoin, this is why I'm not sold on it. Sure. I like physical stuff in my hand. I know people that have made decent money on Bitcoin. A 20-some-odd-year-old kid, he sold like 2 Bitcoins or something that he got in early. Yeah, he was in the military. And he came out here. He's actually here. I got to find his number somewhere. But he actually lives here in the same town I do. He bought 2 properties side by side in town, knocked the houses down, and built a new house in cash.
Wow.
This is a kid in his early 20s. But back to Bitcoin, if you and I are out on a hike and I say, hey, Serge, I'm kind of hungry. Let me get one of your granola bars. He say, yeah, that'll cost you 2 Bitcoin, you know, or 0.002 bit, whatever. Yeah, how do I give that to you? You know, I don't like anything that requires a power source. You know, I got this 1922 silver dollar right here.
Very nice.
Give that. Yeah, I got this from Tony. I can physically give this to you, and then later on when you need something from me, you can give it back.
Well, the funny thing is people are so ignorant now that they think that silver dollar is probably worth a dollar.
Yeah.
But the reality is that silver dollar that you're holding is worth probably about, what, $22 right now? I'm not sure what silver is.
Well, there's not a whole troy ounce in an actual silver dollar. There's a whole troy ounce in the silver rounds. Like your silver eagles, but I forget.
It's like 17 to 19 right now, probably that one.
Yeah, that's probably what you're looking at.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. With that, I guess for me personally, when I first, you know, got into the crypto space, I was very gung ho on Bitcoin. I was like, wow, this is the answer, you know, to the financial crisis. But over the years, the longer I've been in the space of crypto, I really don't trust Bitcoin at all. And I do feel like it's totally controlled. That's just my hunch with it. The story to me, for one, is too good to be true. The people that promote the product are too good to be true, in my opinion. Not Tony, obviously, but but like the Max Kaisers, like the really, really, really big dogs, you know, promoting Bitcoin that have literally hidden millions, potentially billions of dollars of Bitcoin. I mean, you have that whole thing where Alex Jones was gifted like what $8 million in Bitcoin. It was probably from Max Kaiser. Yeah, probably Max Kaiser gave him the Bitcoin. Yeah. That's the only guy I could think of that, like, you know, supports his show that has that kind of Bitcoin. But yeah, in my personal opinion, as they demonize it now, I think eventually they'll marry the two together, to use your words, and potentially make that the CBDC. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're right. Right now they don't like it because they can't tax it. That's what I see. You know, if I own Bit, and that's the one good thing about Bitcoin is if you get it, you have it in your wallet. Nobody knows that, you know, nobody knows that but you, and they can't tax it. They can't inflate it, to take the value. But if basically what's the old saying, if you can't beat them, join them, because they want to have the CBDC. So I could see them trying to make a move to try and take over the CBD or the Bitcoin, if you will.
Well, and my other hunch on that too is, and I know this is potentially a reach, you know, saying this, but I think it also could be they demonize it on purpose because they already control it and want people to get used to buying into it to eventually say, hey, we like it now, but they probably liked it the whole time. Now we're going to marry the two together. I know that's a reach, but I would not be surprised, you know.
I mean, it fits their MO, you know. They do that stuff all the time. So
yeah, I just want to read you guys this one quote here from Unlimited Hangout about CBDC. I know a lot of viewers already know this, but I think this really sums it up. Let's see. This is from Unlimited Hangout. While CBDC proponents tout them as fast, convenient, and ideal for cheaper international transactions, Unlimited Hangout has previously elaborated on CBDC's propensity to undermine anonymity, foster surveillance, and even in terms of programmability, be used to enforce policies or otherwise be weaponized to manipulate or control people's financial activities and behavior. If rolled out on a wider scale and introduced in tandem with other tools like digital IDs, UH contributor Ian Davis and UH contributing editor Whitney Webb have posted that CBDCs could be used to monitor our whereabouts, limit our freedom of movement, and control our access to money, goods, and services. I think that pretty much sums it up.
Oh, absolutely, too. I mean, look what they did with the January 6th people. They tracked their financial, you know, transactions to determine if they were in the Capitol on January 6th. So, I mean, that's the CBDC would be the ultimate way to do that. And ultimately, that's what it's about. You said it in that statement there. It's about controlling behavior. That's what the control is about. The control isn't just because they want to control you. They want to control your behavior. And one more note, I just want people to think about this. If you're okay with all this stuff, okay, and you wind up in your 15-minute city with your UBI, and it's going to expire at the end of the month, so you got to spend it. You know, that's a way to be able to print more money without causing the hyperinflation. You just make the money expire, or you can bail people in. But think about this. I'm in my 15-minute city. I have a 5-minute walk to work. Everything's great. If I have a job, what happens when it snows? What happens when it rains? Are you going to be well? I mean, they're putting all this in like ideal conditions, like, oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be no noise pollution. It's going to be sunny and white, fluffy clouds and all that stuff. Cotton candy for days, you know, but no, it's going to rain. It's going to snow. It's going to be windy. So what are you going to do then? I guess you just rent the ride, you know, the Uber.
Right. Whatever. Yeah. It's very systematic. And I think it's the nail in the coffin for sure. And I don't know, you know, frankly, I don't know if there's much that you can do to stop it, other than gold and silver, I think is a viable option to those who know about it. If you ever watch Mark Dice on YouTube, you know who that is?
Yeah. Mark Dice? I know who Mark Dice is, yeah.
He has done some stuff in the past on YouTube where he'll just, you know, have like a gold coin, right? Like an American Eagle or something that he just brings out into public with his microphone and just starts asking people, hey, do you want $20 right now? Or would you like this gold coin? you know, which is an American Eagle, which I think at the time of his filming was 1600. Now it's gone to 20, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it's at, over two grand right now. Every single person took the $20.
Wow.
Most of them were close to my age. Some of them weren't. One, I think finally
$2,000 right now, you know?
Yeah. Right, well, he had to explain it to everyone. He's like, yeah, you know, with the gold coin, you can just walk into that coin shop over there and they'll give you, you know, money. But he wasn't telling anyone what it's worth, because obviously that would defeat the purpose of the video.
Right.
And finally, one guy at the end, you know, like grabs the coin from him. He's like, I'm taking that, you know. So it's like there might be some hope there. I've heard Gerald Celente talk about it, too, where I've heard him say he doesn't believe that gold and silver will be traded as such amongst local communities. You know, with all the speculation, I think it really just depends who's in your inner circle. I think it has potential. I think it could work. Like I said, the day that this is airing, I'm going to be filming an off grid with some people. If you're in that kind of community, this system could work.
Do me a favor when you go out there, and I was going to ask you this earlier. Ask them how they barter with each other. Do they use something as a token? I mean, it could be a poker chip. It could be anything that's just said, hey, I've done some work, you know, raising my chickens, and then, you know, here's some eggs, but I need something in exchange for that work. And then that token it's a proof of work, right? And then you use that later. So like I always say, if I have eggs and you have corn, okay, you want my eggs today, but your corn's not going to be ready till, you know, next month to be picked. Sure. Or whatever. So that silver coin could be a representation of that transaction, you know.
Yeah.
That, okay, I gave you the eggs, you know, I gave you the eggs, you gave me the coin. I'm going to hang on to this coin to show that I've already invested some work in you. And then whenever you do the work to get the corn, I'm going to exchange it back. So, you know.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, gold and silver don't have to be the medium. You know, if you believe in Bitcoin, if you want to do Bitcoin, I know Tony likes Bitcoin. I might get a little bit just to diversify. But what I'm doing right now, just to get get out of the fiat. That's the thing. Get out of the fiat, because they're stealing your money every single day. They're stealing your time. They're stealing your labor. So what I'm doing is I have ammunition, I have firearms, I have gold and silver. And
well, I was going to say that I think ammunition could potentially be more valuable than everything.
Yes,
at a certain
you can
point.
Hunt. You can't eat gold or silver as much as I like it. You can't eat it, but you know, I can take a bullet and a rifle out, and I can go hunt and get me some food, you know?
Yeah.
And then physical property. I'm big on physical property. That's probably, I'm about 50-50 on the metals and the physical property, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a good idea. And I was going to mention this. I mean, in the event of a financial collapse, gold and silver will not have an intrinsic dollar value anymore, from what I, at least my perspective. I mean, if literally everything came to collapse, all of a sudden it's CBDC, gold being $2,000 in dollar form will not matter right now. So
I don't think assigned a value based on the new system, you know?
Yeah.
So gold and silver. I mean, you can argue that they do kind of go up and down because they play around with these ETFs or the paper gold and silver. So they say there's more out there than there actually is. It's a way of kind of causing inflation, I guess you can say, in the metals market. But gold and silver really don't go up and down. It's the value of the dollar that goes up and down. And so
yeah,
relative to gold. Yeah.
That's a great point. And I should mention this on that whole conversation. I think this actually might have changed my dad's mind, because I was having a conversation with him not too long ago about gold. And, you know, my family, I have a couple people in my family that are literally financial advisors that are very much against gold and silver. They're all about stocks, bonds. Well, not even bonds. They're probably just more about stocks than anything else. They don't like crypto. Because the way they see it is you own an asset of a company, right? On paper, but you don't really,
right?
In my opinion. But they're very much against stacking gold. And I was talking to my dad about gold and silver. And, you know, we were talking about buying like, I think it was like $500 worth of gold. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, that could get you a gold coin. And I'd be like, you'd be lucky if that gets you a quarter ounce anymore of gold coin, you know, $500. And he's like, really, how much is gold going for? And I'm like, $2,000 roughly. And he's like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, you know, literally 1930 gold was around like $30-$40. I mean, that's done well in terms of inflation. So you're right. It's very much attached.
Well, the dollar has done poorly.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Gold is done fine, you know? And I think that kind of was a wake up call for him. He's like, oh, gold is $2,000. That's pretty crazy. Now, silver obviously is not the same story, but it's still worth more than a dollar. I mean, you just showed that silver dollar and it's not worth a dollar. It's worth like 20, you know, close to $20, at least for that one. Yeah. It's got like 90% silver.
I just look at it as they can't, I mean, even with physical property, they property tax you every year for it. So you're always getting taxed on it. They're always whittling away. Not as bad as keeping your money in the bank. But once I have physical bullets, gold, silver, it's in my possession, nobody can tax it anymore. So it's almost like putting it in a jar and sealing it off. It's going to hold that value. So, you know, will we be trading it in the future, you know, in a poop hits the fan situation? I don't know. Maybe not. It just depends on how much confidence the people around you in your circle have in it, and what value you assign it. Like you said, if there's no money, there's, you know, what's the value of it, right? It's what you perceive it to be. But I just know that they can't tax it anymore. And even, I know they're trying to do capital gains tax on metals right now. There's a lot of places doing it, and there's a lot of states that have put into law that they can't tax metal because it's money. It's real money. I know I've got a 401k, precious metals back 401k, where I rolled over all my stocks and stuff over into that Tony helped me do a couple years ago. And they can't tax me on the gains. You know, if the value goes up. Yeah. And now I've got to pay a maintenance fee because it's physically on a pallet in a vault somewhere. Probably a very small pallet. But yeah, there's a maintenance fee that you have to pay on it because, you know, you're renting space in their vault, and I can't go get it myself because it's retirement. I have to wait till I hit the right age to get it. Otherwise I get penalized. So it works like a typical 401k or IRA where, you know, you got all the same rules, but they can't charge you the capital gains tax on it.
Well, I mean, here's the thing too, you know, giving your money to a bank is completely fake. All the money you, and obviously I think all of us have bank accounts, so there's kind of no getting out of it at the same time while you're living in the system, right? If you really go off grid, like where I'm about to film this video, I'm sure some of the people out there might literally not have bank accounts. I might be wrong, but you know, it is possible to not have it. But it goes back to the whole, personally, again, not financial advice, not tactical advice. I should mention too, but if I were to have all of my money in precious metals, I definitely would live off grid because I don't need people around me that could rob me, essentially. And you definitely need to protect yourself. I mean, to me, gold, silver, and guns go hand in hand because it's a physical object that you have to protect. It's your money, quite literally. You know, there's no bank insurance for it. You are the insurance. You know, it's like a Glock. They don't have a safety because you are the safety.
Right. I like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is what it is. So it's definitely a major responsibility, I think, if you choose to put your money into precious metals. But I think, you know, for me personally, I am more thankful for that in the long run than... And also, I would say this, I mean, just from a financial aspect, you don't spend as much because it's harder to cash out when you have to go to a physical place to get the money back.
Well, one last note, you talked about, you know, maybe not being able to have a bank account. I don't know if that's possible because how are you going to pay your taxes? They'll come put you in jail if you don't pay your taxes, right? I guess if you don't have a job.
Saying cash. Yeah, you can't write a check either. I don't know.
Gift card, money order. Yeah, money order maybe. But I guess if you don't have a job, you wouldn't owe any taxes. So you just
I mean that's a there'd be like a whole nother podcast right there. Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to have property to live, so you got at least property tax. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how they will get us eventually. when your property tax and your income tax, and well, the income tax they take out automatically.
Yeah.
But when you have to pay your taxes in a CBDC, which I'm worried about because I know the military, when I first joined the military, they had just started going to the you must have direct deposit system. They wouldn't cut you a check every 2 weeks like sure. they did before. So you had 100% of all federal employees have to have direct deposit. What happens when that turns into CBDC?
Is my retirement, which that's where it's going, you know?
Yeah. And if that happens, I'm either going to have to get on board with the system, which might require some kind of RFID chip or something, you know, or lose my retirement. So, yeah. You know, that's a big concern of mine. And everyone should be thinking about that because they're incrementally working us there. And once it's there, you're not going to stop it.
Well, you're Thomas Jefferson essentially, in a nutshell, stated that the death of the U.S. would be the big cities. And that's the goal, is to collectivize you into groups that you are heavily surveilled, to kind of sum it all up. And, you know, and to live in a city, you have to you can't really afford to do all this on your own kind of prep. You need a vehicle. You need to usually have some sort of job, an apartment, something to cram you into the city to keep you there. So I think the best option for everybody is to start. I think a lot of people get totally overwhelmed by the process of, they think, okay, I gotta like literally get rid of all my belongings and leave town. But I think if you can start systematically kind of taking yourself out of the system, like your bank account, like you don't have to delete your bank account, but maybe, you know, and actually that's a bad idea. You really shouldn't do that, because then the IRS is going to come find you, or the banks will come find you. But you should, probably just start taking out a little bit at a time, basically. Not financial.
Watch out now, that's structured payments there, you know, like I'm getting for that too.
Yeah. Take out a big chunk, leave it for a while. There's a lot of ways you have to get creative with this stuff. I think at the end of the day, again, not financial advice by any means, but I think for sure, precious metals are great. Anything you can physically hold is fantastic. You know,
I would just say, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Diversify a little bit. Like I said, I do ammo, I do guns, I do metals, I do property. And right now I got money in the bank that from selling our house in Georgia, and I'm taking that money, instead of letting it sit there and whittle away to nothing through inflation, I'm actually building a building. A 50 by 30 workshop, because that's something tangible, that's something real, that's going to hold the value. And yeah, my property tax will go up a little bit, but I'm not going to be losing that, you know, in the form of property taxes, fast as if I left it in the bank and they keep just printing endless money, making my money worth less and less every day. So put it in some
money. You know? Money is just to sum this conversation up, there's four kind of hidden dynasties, you could call it, to get you into world government. That would be education, financial or economical, religion and politics. You know, those are like the four things. If you have them systematically together, it'll work very well for the enemy's favor. But I do think the economical one is the biggest one out of all of them. Yeah. Any last thoughts?
No, that's it, man. Thanks for having me again. I love doing this. It's fun.
Yeah, likewise. All right. You know, everyone, you guys have a great day, and I hope I can reply to some of the comments. And thank you guys for watching. Really appreciate it. Wish you guys all a great rest of your day.